Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another evening's adventure with Progressive News Network. I'm your host and senior correspondent, Richard Spezak. I want to let you know that things are wonderful here down in Progressive, Florida. We have some really good news. Progressives came together this weekend in Orlando, and I got to tell you, it was a fantastic sight. You know, we had environmental activists, we had human rights activists, we had women's rights activists, we had social justice and equality activists, we had every kind of progressive you'd want to imagine all come together to hammer out a progressive platform for Florida activists. You know, after day after day after day of equivocation on this totally misconstrued, Republican-derived, fake deficit crisis, when you see progressives come together like this, there is a better world a-coming. That's for sure. Progressives came together yesterday and worked from 8 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock that night, all working together to hammer out a progressive platform. The caucus meeting was fantastic. It was attended by people from across Florida, from north, from south, from east, from west. I saw people there from Tallahassee, from Gainesville, from Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando, Miami, Stuart, Palm Beach, across Florida, all come together to together collaborate on bringing together a progressive platform. You know, when you see how many good people can work so hard together, have some fun, no acrimony, you really have a feeling that there is, in fact, a better world coming. So we'll be doing some excerpts from that tonight. We'll be playing a few of them. The platform is still in its first draft stage. It'll be released over the next couple weeks. But I'm going to tease you with a few excerpts and a glimpse at the first draft language. And I got to tell you, it was a joy to the heart, you know. Now, we all know that there are people who say, you know, given the Republican danger, we've got to stay with one party. We've got to back the current president no matter what. Well, then there's another opinion. Some of us believe that unless we progressives hold the Democratic Party's feet to principle, unless we keep the president aware of the principles of progressives, we're just not going to see progressive policy implemented. Now, we've seen Elizabeth Warren passed over for that consumer agency, and what looks like a good alternative put nominated by the president, so we have to see if he stays with the man. Hopefully, Mr. Breitbart won't have a video about the topic in the next few days. But let's go on. There's some other things I want to talk about first before we have our guests on tonight. We've got some really interesting guests. And, of course, with all our human rights activist friends, we celebrate the victory in New York. A victory for family, a victory for marriage, a victory for lovers, a human rights victory in New York. And I don't care whether you're gay or straight, when love conquers, when the state sets aside these old religious restrictions and human beings can come together, that's a good day. So it's a good day for our good friends up in New York and across the country. We've got some wonderful guests tonight. We've got Keith McHenry of Food Nops Bombs Orlando. That man is facing a year in prison for, catch this, feeding hungry people. Yeah, the city of Orlando has called him a food terrorist. Now imagine that. I guess they'd probably call Jesus a healing terrorist for raising the dead, or a food terrorist for feeding the loaves and fishes to all those multitudes. Because if you feed more than 24 people, you're called a food terrorist in Orlando. Yeah, that's a big welcome from the city of the mouse, huh? Okay. I want to read you some other news that you won't hear too much of on commercial media. We've got some stories here from across the globe. One of our fine contributors, Mr. Malagodi, has been sending us news on the Fukushima front. In case you've allowed yourself to forget about it just for a minute, Fukushima and the four reactors there, damaged by the earthquake and then the tsunami, seems that that's the gift that keeps on giving. There's a lot of news, and unfortunately, it's really, really bad on that front. So let me read a couple of these stories to you. Then we're going to cover some stories on the local state front. It seems that this whole privatization scheme is just not going so good for the prisons. You know, the people that pay for those Republican legislators in Tallahassee, those lobbyists who write the laws. You know, they've coaxed those Republican legislators to give away the prison system to private hands. Now, of course, if you're in the private prison business, it only makes sense for you to keep as many people in there as possible, doesn't it? Keep them in there, keep them under onerous conditions, you know, save a buck, make a buck. Who could have imagined that after all these years in the search for justice, that the prison system, the correction system, the rehabilitation system would be turned in and turned over to profit-making hands who are going to make a buck on human misery, make a buck on justice. Now, isn't that something else, friends? Okay, and then our final guest of the evening, the charming, the handsome, the talented, the leader in progressive circles, Brother Luis Cuevas will be joining us later in the show, who'll give us some updates from the North, and we absolutely welcome his fine contributions tonight, as always. But let me switch over to that Fukushima news. I want to get this over with fast, get the bad taste out of your mouth. I won't even say Bachman, but I'm going to say Fukushima, so I apologize, friends. First item is Fukushima. It's worse than you think. Fukushima, the biggest industrial catastrophe in the history of mankind. And that's from Arnold Gunderson, a former nuclear industry senior vice president. Japan's 9.0 earthquake on March 11 caused a massive tsunami that crippled the cooling systems at Tokyo Electric Power Company's TEPCO nuclear plant in Fukushima, Japan. It also led to hydrogen explosions and a complete reactor meltdown that forced the evacuation of those living within a 20-kilometer radius of the plant. Now, keep that 20-kilometer radius of the plant in mind as we continue. Gunderson, a licensed reactor operator with 39 years of nuclear power engineering experience, managed and coordinating projects at 70 different nuclear plants around the U.S., says that Fukushima likely has exposed more radioactive core than commonly believed. It seems that again and again and again, TEPCO, the managing company, has downplayed the dangers, downplayed the damage, downplayed it to try to keep people, they say, from panicking. Of course, it's couldn't have been to cover their considerable assets, don't you think? It says Fukushima has 3 nuclear reactors exposed and 4 fuel cores exposed. See, the whole way a nuclear power plant works is those rods being brought up and down are either cooled or heated. The closer they all are together, the greater the heat. The further they are apart, the less the heat, the less the interaction. And when they pool, when they melt down and make one big lump at the bottom of the reactor, my friends, there's just no way to cool that. And the reactor vessels are not closed. TEPCO has been spraying water on several of the reactors and the fuel cores, but this has led to even greater problems, such as radiation being emitted into the air in steam and evaporated seawater, as well as generating hundreds of thousands of tons of highly radioactive seawater that has to be disposed of. The problem here, says Gunderson, is how to keep it cool. They're pouring in water, and the question is what they're going to do with all that waste that comes out of the system, because it's going to contain plutonium and uranium, and where do you put the water? Even though the plant is now shut down, fission products such as uranium continue to generate heat and therefore require cooling. Fuel is now a molten blob at the bottom of the reactor, Gunderson said. TEPCO announced that they had a melt-through, not just a meltdown, but a melt-through. A meltdown is when the fuel collapses to the bottom of the reactor, and a melt-through means that it has melted through some layers. Now, they're still not PRing us, are they? They're still, maybe now, they're telling us the truth. Maybe that blob is incredibly radioactive, Gunderson said. And now you have water on top of it. And the water picks up enormous amounts of radiation, so if you add more water, you're generating hundreds of thousands of tons of highly radioactive water. Independent scientists have been monitoring the location of radioactive hotspots around Japan, and their findings are disconcerting. No concert there. They're disconcerting. We have 20 nuclear cores exposed. The fuel piles have several cores in each of them, which is 20 times the potential to be released than Chernobyl. 20 times the potential to be released than Chernobyl, said Gunderson. The data I'm seeing shows that we are finding hotspots further away than we had from even Chernobyl. And the amount of radiation in many of them was the amount that caused areas to be declared no man land for Chernobyl. We're seeing square kilometers being found 60 to 80 kilometers away. Oh, wait a minute. They evacuated people 20 kilometers away. 60 to 80 kilometers away, they're finding square kilometers. You can't clean all this up. We have radioactive wild boar in Germany 30 years after Chernobyl. Now, on another front, radiation monitors for children. Japan's Nuclear Emergency Response Headquarters finally admitted earlier this month that reactors 1, 2, and 3 at the Fukushima plant experienced full meltdowns. TEPCO announced that the accident probably released more radioactive material into the environment than Chernobyl, making it the worst nuclear accident on record that we know about. Meanwhile, a nuclear waste advisor to the Japanese government reports that over 956 square kilometers near the power station, an area roughly equivalent to 17 times the size of Manhattan, is now likely uninhabitable. Uninhabitable. 17 times the size of Manhattan. In the U.S., physicist Jeanette Sherman, M.D., and epidemiologist Joseph Magano published an essay shedding light on the 35% spike in infant mortality in Northwest cities that occurred after the Fukushima meltdown and may well be the result of fallout from the stricken nuclear plant. 8 cities included in the report are San Jose, Berkeley, San Francisco, Sacramento, San Cruz, Portland, Seattle, and Boise. Now that's San Jose, California, Berkeley, California, San Francisco, California, Sacramento, California, Santa Cruz, New Mexico, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, and Boise, Idaho. And the time frame of the report includes 10 weeks immediately following the disaster, my friends. there is and should be concerned about young people being exposed, and the Japanese government will be giving out radiation monitors to children. Dr. M.V. Romana, a physicist with the Program on Science and Global Security at Princeton University, who specializes in the incidence of nuclear safety. Dr. Romana explained that he believes the primary radiation threat continues to be mostly for residents living within 50 kilometers of the plant. Living within 50 kilometers of the plant, but added there are going to be areas outside the Japanese government's 20-kilometer mandatory evacuation zone where radiation is higher. So that could mean evacuation zones in those areas as well. Gunderson points out that far more radiation has been released than has been reported. That's a shocker. That's a real shocker. They recalculated the amount of radiation released, but the news is really not talking about this. Oh my God, what a surprise! The new calculations show that within the first week of the accident, they released 2 to 3 times as much radiation as they thought they released in the first 80 days. 2 to 3 times as much radiation as they thought took place, and that was over the first week. Over the first week, they released 2 to 3 times as much radiation as they thought had been released in the first 80 days. 1 week, 80 days. According to Gunderson, the exposed reactors and fuel cores are continuing to release microns of cesium, strontium, plutonium isotopes. They are referred to as hot particles. Hot, hot, hot. We are discovering hot particles everywhere in Japan, even in Tokyo. Scientists are finding these everywhere. Over the last 90 days, these hot particles have continued to fall and are being deposited in high concentrations. People are picking these up in their car air filters. Radioactive air filters from cars in Fukushima Prefecture and Tokyo are now common. Oh, to be a car mechanic. And Gunderson said his sources are finding radioactive air filters in the greater Seattle area of the U.S. as well. Okay, let me read that again. Radioactive car filters, like the cars in the Fukushima Prefecture in Tokyo, are now common. And Gunderson said his sources are finding radioactive air filters in the cars in greater Seattle. Oh, maybe it's one world. Maybe we're all connected. I don't know. What do you think? The hot particles on them can lead to cancer. These get stuck in your lungs or the GI tract, and they are a constant irritant, he explained. One cigarette doesn't get you, but over time they do. These hot particles can cause cancer, but you can't measure them with a Geiger counter. Clearly, people in Fukushima Prefecture have breathed a large amount of these particles. Clearly, the upper west coast of the U.S. has people being affected. That area got pretty heavily hit in April. Blame the U.S. In a reaction to the Fukushima catastrophe, Germany is phasing out all of its nuclear reactors over the next decade. In a referendum vote this Monday, 95% of Italians voted in favor of blocking a nuclear plant revival in their country. A recent newspaper poll in Japan shows that nearly three-quarters of respondents favor a phase-out of nuclear power in Japan. Why have alarms not been sounded about radiation exposure in the U.S.? Oh, I don't know. What do you think? Nuclear operator Exelon Corporation has been among Barack Obama's biggest campaign donors and is one of the largest employers in Illinois, where Obama was senator. Exelon has donated more than $269,000 to his political campaign thus far. Obama also appointed Exelon CEO John Rowe to the Blue Ribbon Commission on America's Nuclear Future. Dr. Soji Sawada is a theoretical particle physicist and a professor emeritus at Nagoya University in Japan. He's concerned about the types of nuclear plants in his country and the fact that most of them are of U.S. design. Most of the reactors in Japan were designed by U.S. companies who did not care for the effects of earthquakes. Oops. Dr. Sawada told Al Jazeera, I think this problem applies to all nuclear power stations across Japan. Using nuclear power to produce electricity in Japan is the product of a nuclear policy of the U.S. something. Dr. Sawada feels is also a large component of the problem. Most Japanese scientists at the time, in the mid-50s, considered the technology of nuclear energy was under development and not established enough, and it was too early to put it into practical use. Japanese Science Council recommended the Japanese government not use this technology, but the government accepted to use enriched uranium to fuel nuclear power stations and thus was subjected to U.S. government policy. As a 13-year-old, Dr. Sawada experienced nuclear attack against Japan from his country, situated just 1,400 meters from the hypercenter of the Hiroshima bomb. I think Fukushima accident has caused Japanese people to abandon the myth that nuclear power stations are safe. He said, now the opinion of the Japanese people have rapidly changed. Well beyond half the population believe that Japan should move toward natural electricity, a problem of infinite proportions. Dr. Romana expects the plant reactors and fuel cores to be cooled enough for a shutdown within 2 years, maybe. But it's going to take a very long time before the fuel can be removed from the reactor, he added. Dealing with the cracking and compromised structure, dealing with the radiation in the area, will take years, and there's no question about that. Dr. Sawada is not clear about how long a cold shutdown could take and said that the problem will be the effects of cesium-137 that remains in the soil and polluted water around the plant, station, and underground. It'll take a year or more, he suggested, to deal with that. Gunderson pointed out that the units are still leaking radiation. They're still leaking. They're still emitting radioactive gases and an enormous amount of radioactive liquid. He said it'll be at least a year before it stops boiling, and until it stops boiling, it's going to be cranking out radioactive steam and liquids. Gunderson worries about more earthquake aftershocks as well as how to cool two of the units. Unit 4 is the most dangerous. It could topple, he said. After the earthquake in Sumatra, there was an 8.6 aftershock, and about 90 days later, so we're not out of the woods yet. And if you're at a point where, if that happens, there is no science for this. No one has ever imagined having hot nuclear fuel lying outside the fuel pool. They've not figured out how to cool units 3 and 4. One last point about this. Dr. Gunderson's assessment of this situation is grim. Units 1 through 3 have nuclear waste on the floor, the melted core that has plutonium in it, and that has to be removed from the environment for hundreds of thousands of years, he said. Somehow, robotically, they'll have to go in there and manage to put it in a container and store it for infinity. Yeah, they only have to store it for infinity. And he added that that technology doesn't exist. Nobody knows how to pick up molten core from the floor, and there's no solution available for how to pick that up from the floor. Dr. Sawada said the creation of a nuclear fission generates radioactive material for which there is simply no knowledge informing us of how to dispose of the radioactive waste safety. And there are people who think that nuclear power isn't safe and hasn't been fully figured out. Can you imagine? I do want to get to at least one little sample from the Progressive Caucus. I'm going to play you an excerpt of the discussion by the Media Caucus from the Progressive Conference on Platform. So bear with me for just a second while I set this up, and I hope you enjoy it. Again, there'll be much more of this coming up, and in about 2 weeks, the full documents will be released, and we'll go over that then. So let me play this little sample for you, give you a taste of it. You okay?
Media.
Good job.
great team we got here.
Together, who made this meeting possible. Of course, we've got to thank Susan Smith and Nick Zalesko and Edwin and CISO and Ray Seaman and all the great people involved, both visible and invisible. I want to thank all of the activists. It was tremendous. I do want to mention a couple other things. No one felt that this was the final list, that this was the comprehensive list, but it was a darn good start. Let me just give you a sense of some of the constituencies, some of the caucuses that were formed and topics that were discussed. We had an educational caucus. We had an organized labor caucus. We had the new majority caucus. We had, jobs and economic development caucus. A social justice caucus. We had a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and questioning caucus. We had public education and educational sustainability. We had discussions on healthcare. We had discussions on the environment. We had discussions on media. We had discussions for seniors. And we had a women's issue caucus. And I got to tell you, some very funny things happened with that. You got to speak to some of the women involved. It was wonderful, and a very humorous set of incidents occurred. But I'm going to ask you to talk to people who were there. You got to find out. It was very funny, and it was really a marvelous, marvelous event. And I hope that when these events continue, you will be there. Because let me tell you, friends, the antidote to you feeling bad about the decisions going down in Washington, about the direction of debate going on up there in D.C., about the fact that too often it seems that the Republicans or the Tea Party have totally snatched the agenda from anything that serves the people. You have to come out and participate in these progressive caucus meetings. They are absolutely amazing. And it's the antidote to all this kind of depressing sellout capitulation stuff that we see all too often from those people who are supposed to be the leaders of the progressive Democratic Party. It seems too often that we don't hear what we expect to hear, what we need to hear from D.C. And here we go. We've got our first guest. Let me bring him on.
Henry.
Come on in there, Mr. McHenry. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. This is fantastic.
So, Keith, tell us, since the last time you were here, you warned us that you would be continuing your good efforts to feed the hungry, and you anticipated, unfortunately, continued police pressure. Tell us what happened, sir.
Yeah, well, on June 1st, I was arrested and held just for 2 days. For sharing food with more than 24 people. They said that they counted 40 people by the time they decided to arrest me. And then on the 22nd of June, I was just helping direct food into the park. When I got arrested again, I got charged with trespassing and aiding and abetting in a criminal activity, the criminal activity being the distribution of free food to more than 24 people. So I was held at that time for 17 days, and the reason being that the judge that I kept ending up before, who was an activist judge that was trying to bring me before him because he disliked food not bombs and he disliked the fact that people were sharing food in outside in Orlando, he kept refusing to allow me to get bail. And so it took until the 17th day I was finally able to get before a judge that didn't have a personal grudge against the organization, and that just allowed me to post bail.
I guess justice's blindfold slipped there, huh?
It certainly did. I mean, it was incredible. The first time I'm before that judge, Blackwell starts screaming at me that it was so horrible that I was doing this, and, you know, that we're a nation of laws, and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals had ruled that we had to, you know, stop sharing food, so therefore we should stop sharing food. And by the next court appearance, a week later, it turned out he found out that I was a serial food distributor and I'd been arrested in California for sharing free food. And so he's screaming at my lawyer that I look at, he's been arrested even in California for feeding the hungry. How can, you know, this guy's a, you know, professional activist and a professional food sharer, and this is outrageous. And so we had to withdraw our petition, you know, to be bailed, because there was no way. If we had allowed him to make an official position about being bonded or not, then I would be in right now. I would have to wait for my trial, which would have been in early September.
Is your attorney also appealing that particular judge's actions? Is the situation, you know, is there a way of addressing his personal animus?
Well, there is. We can file, and we're talking about filing basically a protest to, there's a judicial board about which we can write to. It's not really that effective, but it might be if a number of different individuals over time keep opposing the fact that he uses his personal opinion to such an extreme extent. And we can provide the tapes of these statements, which are really outrageous, that over time he might be reprimanded, might not be allowed to go to a higher office or something. So it's worth it on that level. But the other thing is we're really tied up with the fact that we are being arrested, you know, anyway, and we've got all these other problems. For instance, one of the problems which resulted in my incarceration was the fact that they changed the rules surrounding trespass. And so originally the trespass law in Orlando was that you were allowed First Amendment rights to protest in a public space, but that we were not allowed to actually share the food and so on. So we were abiding by that, but then they changed it one day and just decided off the top of their heads that you couldn't even be in the park or near the park anyway, whether you were really sharing food or not. And the fact that I intentionally did not touch the food and was not, you know, I was just talking to people that were touching food, I felt was, you know, I was in my legal rights from the way that they had organized the trespass law to begin with, but it turned out they decided on the top of their head just to change it. So that's one of the issues that we're fighting. And the other, that the mayor, who's got his own legal problems, it looks like, with illegal activities in election fraud and things like that, but he's also at the same time declaring Food Not Bombs activists terrorists and making a huge deal in the media that we're somehow a terrorist organization and trying to connect us to, to cyber hackers and claiming they're terrorists. And there's this whole like crazy defamation and personal attacks against the Food Not Bombs volunteers by well-paid elected leaders in a campaign of smearing us. That kind of issue is somewhat in more of a problem. Then another problem is he's illegally using his power to manipulate other food programs that he is responsible for or funds to organize against Food Not Bombs and trying to pit Salvation Army, Coalition on Homelessness, and others, which are programs that we don't necessarily, you know, have any problems with. I mean, they do charge money for poor people to eat at their locations and things like that. Their food isn't vegan and it's not very healthy, and they're not real, real respectful for their clients. But, you know, they are doing something for the poor, and, we would not organize against them, but they feel threatened with their funding will be threatened if they don't attack Food Not Bombs. So there's all these dirty tricks that are happening with the city of Orlando, particularly the mayor and some of the more conservative city councilors, and the fact that the judicial system itself is illegal. It's just one part of the total overall illegality of the city and their disregard for the human rights of their citizens.
Well, Keith, I just got to say, you know, I feel for you. I will have you on this show and support Food Not Bombs every way I can. Count on our show as a friend. And if there's anything else we can do, believe me, we support you. I hope.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Why don't you give your web address, sir, so that people can? I'm sure there's a way of giving donations online. Give us your web address so people can support.
Yeah,
you.
We're desperate. Yeah, we're actually kind of desperate for funding because we spent like a lot of money on bail. I have $300 more I have to raise for that I had to pay rent for being in jail, so I owe $300 for that. And I have to fly two more times back to Orlando from my home. I had to go deal with the fact that my father passed away and stuff, so I've got to go back to Orlando. And so they can go to foodnotbombs.net. And there is a Dollar for Peace page on there. It's like donations. And people can do like a one-time donation of any amount, or you can do monthly contributions. And like you say, we are really hurting for money because we've had to pay like we have like several thousand dollars more just on the legal expenses that we have to raise, and let alone the fact that we had to bail out 29 people at least $100, in some cases $200 a person. So contributions would be really helpful. And also on the website, foodnotbombs.net, you can find out more updates about, like, who's going to trial when, what the charges are. I'm, for instance, I'm facing at least a year in jail behind this. I go to court on August 9th, and I'm trying to raise money to fly to Orlando for that court appearance. And it's super important to never be doing anything like missing a court date or anything in Florida, because they have a system where they will try to bring you back from any state or any country, and you can end up spending months and months in jail if you just from having missed a court date, so just from a traffic stop in your own hometown.
Well, you know, Keith, if we can, we'd love to have you come back on the 7th and, you know, call in for another appearance, because we want to help you try to do some fundraising. I can guarantee you this, we will always, always mention your Food Not Bombs site on this show.
Our hats are to you. That's so beautiful.
You're doing such good work, my friend. My God, you know, when we see the holes being drilled in the safety net, the you know, frayed bare ends being cut left and right, the fact that these people want to balance the war costs on the poor, I just find so reprehensible. I'm almost prepared to say something as bad as Congressman West. You know what I mean?
Right. It is so frightening. And the way that the economy is teetering, I mean, there's so many potential crises in the next few months, even by the time before my arraignment on the 9th. You know, who knows what will happen between now and the radio show on the 7th. Things could be, like, so topsy-turvy. And the fact that they will not even touch the military budget, instead get rid of Medicare, you know, cut Medicare, you know, Social Security, unemployment in many places. And the amount of people becoming homeless is, like, so tragic in this country. It's outrageous. And yet at the same time, the law that is being, where we're being arrested in Orlando, one of the reasons we're trying to fight there so strongly is that all the other major cities of Florida are proposing the same legislation. And we've also got news that Houston Food Not Bombs is potentially going to be outlawed there. This law could be moving into Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, as well as crossing all over Florida. So literally thousands and thousands of people could find themselves unable to find food. And right now in Orlando, Florida, there's 9,000 homeless people, yet with all the city services that are available, Salvation Army and churches and Food Not Bombs, there's only 1,500 of those 9,000 are able to find a meal. And that's outrageous.
Well, you know, when we have a supposed Democratic president whose first opening gambit was to say, well, we'll just cut off the elderly from their winter fuel stipend. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Is this, you know, Commander Scrooge talking to Bob Cratchit? I don't understand how Democrats do that. Let's see, they've spent a lot of money on war while cutting taxes, so what we'll do is we'll screw the poor some more. I don't understand how Democrats do that. It's completely incomprehensible to me. And the fact that you, my friend, have made it your life's work to feed the homeless, feed the hungry, brother, you know, if you're not doing the work of the great divine, I don't know what is, because it sure is.
Well, thank you so much.
Brother, you're a sacred man, if you ask me, and I support you 100%. And you'll be getting some of my pennies, that's for sure. That's for sure. And
thank you so much.
Anytime you can, you know, you want to talk to us, or you want to talk to the audience, or give us a heads up, you just call us, okay? You are always
Fantastic. Welcome
on this show. Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. That's beautiful.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye.
That's right, friends. It's up to you and me. You know, we can't depend on that guy. We have to depend on our brothers and sisters. And if we're going to have that better world, it's going to be up to you and me. You know, I got to tell you something else. We had some Florida legislators at that progressive conference. And to see these fine men showing up to add their voices to the progressive movement, it was a beautiful thing. I've got to single out Mr. Mark Pafford and Mr. Randolph. What fine men they were. And they came and they shared their time with us and they lent their voices to these causes to make this a better world. And just like Keith, every day, working to make this a better world. And now we got Brother Louis Cuevas. Louis, welcome, sir. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's great to hear you, man. I hope you're feeling better.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. So, sir, tell us, what news with you, sir? What's new with you?
Over here in North Florida, this time of the year is all very slow, and with the legislature being out, everything is looking at what is going on in the political world of Florida. And what we're seeing is interesting developments within the Republican Party. It seems almost as if there is a little civil war going in back there. Of course,
yes, startling change in the Senate campaign, huh?
Yes. Apparently, you remember that old Ronald Reagan used to say that Republicans will not speak any evil of another Republican. But apparently, you know, one of the things that he didn't say was that it's okay to backstab each other. And you get this picture of all these Republicans going around with a knife in their back, because this is becoming very, very obvious that right now there is a struggle of some kind for power. It does appear that the Teabaggers, also known as the Tea Party, that they're behind a lot of these things to get the status quo. The old Republicans out of the way. And, of course, you've got Baltimore Scott, the governor of the state, doing his thing, trying to figure out how many more jobs he can kill throughout the state. And in that process, he wants to get apparently some candidates out there who will back him up for what he wants. The latest mishap, downfall within the party, was that of the Senate president, who was trying to get himself into the Senate race for the state.
Old Dirty Harry.
Yes, and apparently what happens there is that there's a lot of very questionable wheelings and dealings way beyond what appears as reported by the media that has to do with a book and that he was overpaid for it. But you see, that is only a little cover, because what is coming out right now is that he's been working with an individual who has been a campaign manager for many Republicans, and he has always been under the wire. Let's say he takes a very low-keyed role in all these things. But apparently, what is to get to the point is that O'Hare has actually been lobbying while being in office.
Oops.
To the tune of $100,000 a year.
Oh, my.
Yes. And in all that, it all appears as if there are other wheelings and dealings that he's gotten himself into with developments. You see, it is between him and his campaign manager. They've been making it easier for some developers to get their projects through.
Yep.
And that was coming out, he was threatened by another group of Republicans with coming out putting this, that he would be exposed to the public.
Well, you know, I did also think it's strange. Now, you know, of course, some of the press is reporting in very, very discreet terms that some of former Republican Chair Greer's problems are rubbing off on Dirty Harry. But
yeah.
Then also at the same time, the other curious face that I saw suddenly reappear is Lemieux, which I thought tremendously odd because other than being a Crist friend, you know, FOC, he's certainly got no kind of cred, I would think, with the Republican right. You know, and yet at the same time, we see Haridopoulos dropping out.
Right.
A strange mix up there.
Exactly. There's a lot going on in there. Lemieux, also known as Le Pew,
right.
If you remember Pepe Le Pew.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Skunk. Yes. Actually, he reneged on the good old Chris. And then after having served and left, he's trying to make a comeback. And actually, I don't know how on earth he got a hold of my mail, but he sent me a letter regarding his campaign and asking for a donation, which, of course, he will never get. But that is going on there. On the other hand, Dirty Harry actually owes part of his career to Jim Greer. Jim Greer having been the chair of the Republican Party in the state of Florida. And Jim got a little bit overambitious and created a corporation, a company, actually, with the executive director of the Republican Party. Yeah, and Delmar Johnson. And what they did was they were skimming money off the top of all the donations that we're giving to the Republican Party. And, of course, good old Jim Greer got the better part of that. He's said to have taken over $240,000 within 9 months.
These guys are going to give Greed a bad name, Lewis.
Yes, but you see, that's where they get into trouble because they got so greedy that they were not sharing with others. And that's part of the problem. When you are in that business and you don't share, some people say if you get wet, you need to splash so others it will be also wet and they won't complain. Well, this is what is happening. These guys were keeping it all to themselves, and you know that didn't go well. They found out and they turned him over to the authorities. Incredibly enough, Johnson turned against Greer.
Oh my.
And then began to collaborate with the Florida authorities, and in fact he even went through the process of apparently having all his communications with Greer passed on to the Florida authorities.
Oh my.
Including finding out what the gate numbers, you know, the code to enter Greer's property. He found out he passed it on to them so that they could go in and raid his house. You see, and
when interesting things fall out.
Yes, the interesting thing is that Delmar Johnson apparently is the godfather to one of Greer's children. And Mrs. Greer was really mad at Mr. Johnson because he had done this awful thing of turning her husband over because they were all doing all these things. But it goes even further back because now it has been found that Mr. Greer is not the first time that he does this type of thing. He actually owned a bar, Joe's, I think it was, in Tallahassee. And at that bar, he owned it with several other partners, and apparently he did the same thing.
He was skimming off his buddies there, too?
Yes. So he was taking money off the top, and eventually they all broke up. But this might not be the end of what we see of Mr. Greer. You know that he's coming up for trial. His trial was
postponed. Election time? Tell me it's an election time, Lewis.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing is that you know who his lawyer is for Jim Greer? It happens to be the Mr. Mason Cheney, who just got Miss Casey Anthony off from jail.
Oh, my God. Boy, yes. Talk about, association, huh?
Yeah. Of all these things, and Mr. Mason was known during the trial as Colonel Sanders. For some reason, he was there with he showed up in a white suit, and that name just stuck. and that's what he's known for. But that'll be interesting now, figuring out if this is going to become an even bigger case than it used to be, because of course there might be more attention paid on Mr. Cheney now.
Yeah.
And therefore I think that a lot of people might be even scared of what Greer has to say, because eventually Greer has supposedly written a book. And in that book, he tells all, including personal stuff about Mr. Charlie Crist.
Oh, I see.
So yes, and that book was impounded temporarily. I don't know if they have released it, but it was taken away. So what's in there and what will come out, that is going to be the soap opera of the end of the summer, probably.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, a curious and prescient thing happened yesterday at that platform conference. One of the platform points that I urged on the media committee was that we really come out four square in favor of whistleblowers. Because I said, with this bunch of thieves in Tallahassee, you know, greed will overcome all kinds of good judgment. And when those guys start burning each other, who knows what good may come to the public, right?
Yes, yes. But, you know, that the problem is that they all say that greed is good. So, you know, there's something about, you know, the greater good for the very few, and that is what is happening there. And then there is just so much money to be raked in that the temptations are just incredible.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you came on and told us this should we say, this happy tale of corruption, if you will. Occasionally, you know, they do get caught, and that's a good thing, because earlier the show was rather sober. We had a report on Fukushima, and we had that conversation with poor Keith McHenry, who is doing such wonderful things with Food Not Bombs.
Right, they are.
So, so you know, to hear about his troubles and what he's trying to go through going while he's helping to feed the poor, and yet you got a chance to tell us this really good story about how occasionally sin and corruption does have its day.
When
thieves fall out, good men come into their own. So thanks for that wonderful tale, Lewis. It's very uplifting.
There's a radio show here in Gainesville, and they usually go after, you know, what criminals have been doing, and they have a sentence, criminals are stupid. And, you know, they get themselves caught, you know, with the most ridiculous reasons. And they almost put up a face and say, did I do that? they just cannot even understand why they were caught. But it's a good thing that they're getting caught. They are self-destructive. At least that's one thing that we got on our favor, even though some of our political leaders are also quite self-destructive.
Well, I have to thank you off right now, brother. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the conversation.
Okay, brother. You take care of yourself, huh?
Thank you. You too. Good night.
On behalf of Progressive News Network, I'm Richard Spisak, news director. I want to thank you also on behalf of my colleague, Mickey Royce, of Media Goddess Unlimited. So thanks a lot. Join us next week when Progressive News Network features the women's show. Power to the people. Equal pay for equal work. Let's hear it. Delay no more, because there's a better world coming.
There's a better world.